This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. So, will Britain quit the European Union? On this edition of the program, arguments for and against Brexit, and what's at stake for Britain, Europe, and the United States. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. On June 23rd, UK voters will decide whether to leave the European Union. British Prime Minister David Cameron is spearheading the push to persuade Britons to vote to remain, asserting that Britain should maintain its membership in a bloc of like-minded countries to sustain the UK's global influence and military and economic security. But there is a split among Conservatives. Proponents of the Leave camp say an exit would free Britain from rules that hinder job creation and from the burdensome regulations and cost of EU membership. Unease about immigration has also been fueling anti-EU sentiment in the UK, just as similar concerns have fostered frustration with political elites in the United States and across Europe. But the shooting death of a pro-EU British Member of Parliament this week illustrates the fraught and polarized nature of the hotly debated referendum to stay or leave the European Union. Some witnesses reported hearing the assailant yell, "Britain first," as he shot, stabbed, and kicked Joe Cox, a junior Labour Member of Parliament. The 41-year-old mother of two and former aid worker was known for her advocacy for Syrian refugees, her pro-immigrant stance, and most notably, her opposition to a British exit from the EU. The death of Joe Cox stunned a country where gun attacks are rare and political violence is almost unheard of. Campaigning for the referendum was temporarily suspended in light of this tragedy, which is likely to have an impact on the vote. But as of now, the outcome is still too close to call. With us to discuss the ramifications of the upcoming June 23rd referendum on whether Britain should stay or leave the European Union are Robin Simcox. He's Margaret Thatcher Fellow, specializing in terrorism and national security analysis at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank based here in Washington. And David Rennie. He's the Washington Bureau Chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist magazine. David is also a frequent panelist on VOA's Roundup of the Week's Top Stories, Issues in the News. Well, both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Thank you.
Robin Simcox, let me begin with you. Talk about this split among the Conservatives. What is the ratio of those for and against?
Well, the split among Conservatives when it comes to the European Union is something that certainly predates this referendum. This is something, an issue that's torn apart the Conservatives for decades now. And I think that I'm not even sure whether it's 50-50. I think generally the base of Conservative MPs have always been Eurosceptic. That doesn't mean that all of them are going to vote for leave, I would say, but they have always been Eurosceptic. Whereas David Cameron, the Prime Minister, some of his closest allies, like George Osborne, the Chancellor, regard the European Union as a somewhat problematic force, but ultimately one that benefits Britain in the long run. I think the real interesting split, though, is going to be among working class Labour voters, who also have taken on a great degree of Euroscepticism in recent years. And it may be that that vote is significant in telling us whether Britain will be a member of the European Union or leave.
David Rennie, very interesting. So Euroscepticism is not just something among the Conservatives. We have that among the Labour Party as well.
No, I think you have to take a step back. How do we get here? You know, if I had to bet, I think we probably will narrowly leave. My magazine, The Economist, we think that would be an unbelievable self-inflicted injury. And, you know, we can discuss later, will hurt us in lots of economic ways. How did we get here? Well, Britain has never loved the European Union. British people don't look at the European flag, the blue flag with the gold stars, and feel a kind of swelling of the heart. They don't sing the European national anthem. They don't dream of seeing British soldiers march in a European army. So the Brits have always been different. We joined the European Union late. We joined it reluctantly. We joined it in the early 1970s basically because Britain was an economic basket case and the continent of Europe, countries like France and Germany, looked more successful. So reluctantly, Britain threw its lot in with the continent. Two huge things have changed. At the elite level, at the level of members of parliament, they used to think, well, We may not like all the rules and regulations, we may not love the European Union, but it gets us access to that big European trading market. And so we'll swallow our kind of dislike in exchange for that access. The big thing that's changed is that Europe has had a rough few years economically. You had the euro crisis. Europe is still very, very sluggish on the continent. So you now have MPs thinking, well, if I never loved it and access to that market looks like access to a pretty rubbish market, maybe we should leave. So that's a big change. And you see Conservatives saying things like, we're shackled to a corpse. That's the kind of language they use. The other gigantic thing that has changed on the side of public opinion is that when you had this big enlargement of the European Union, take in former communist countries, countries like Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, what happened was you had a big influx of hundreds of thousands of East Europeans into the UK. Now, the economists would say that was a great thing for the British economy. It was a marvellous thing. But what that meant was that suddenly the argument about Europe became an argument about immigration. It became an argument about borders. And so you have the elites thinking, maybe we're paying a price for access to something that isn't worth as much as we thought. And you have public opinion going, Europe means loss of border controls. It means lots of foreigners in my high street. It means when I go into my local pub, there's people talking languages I don't understand. There's a Polish grocer's where there used to be an English butcher's. What's going on with my country?
Back to you, Robin Simcox. David Rennie really lays out a very important backdrop to this vote, how Britain has always been somewhat different. It is an island, not that euro-friendly, but nonetheless, there were compelling reasons to join the bloc. Now we have the referendum coming up. I know that you're of the so-called leave camp. Let's talk about that position a little bit more. What are the principal arguments, in your view, why Britain should leave the European Union?
Well, I think David makes the point very well, actually, in terms of some of the reasons why Euroscepticism has developed to the extent it has. And I think the campaign has become ultimately about immigration. But again, this isn't something that I think has developed just with a conversation over the referendum. Immigration has been a core issue in Britain when you look at the polling of what really animates British voters. Immigration is always very high. Now, what you've had is MPs saying for years and years, and David Cameron made the vow that he would bring immigration down to the tens of thousands. And each time, politicians have failed because obviously they can't control immigration really as part of membership of the EU. Some people would say that the trade-off is worth it, and I understand that argument. But I think what has happened is that there has been a great deal of anger in the British public of this core issue, which has been so key to them, is not only going unaddressed by politicians, they're essentially being lied to about it. So that kind of anger, I think, is animating some of the momentum behind the Remain side. I mean, on the economy, it's clearly the Remain side's strongest point, and I think it's something that David Cameron and the Remain side are going to keep on hitting in the lead-up to polling day. I think the problem is for them on it is that there is a reluctance to put too much faith in what the Chancellor and some of the worthies around him say, because they've been wrong so many times in the past. And, you know, some of the bodies that are talking about Britain's economic disaster would also the same people say we should join the euro, which obviously didn't work out. So I think there is a kind of scepticism on that point as well as to how much these experts, I suppose, really can forecast the future.
Well, back to you, David Rennie. As you alluded to in your previous answer, I mean, the UK is still very independent, notwithstanding currently a member of the EU. It is not part of the eurozone. It is not part of the Schengen. So address these concerns on the part of the so-called Eurosceptics, so immigration, and of course the economic side.
So I think Robin is right that politicians like David Cameron have been basically lying to the British people and pandering to their anti-immigrant kind of instincts and saying, I can reduce, you know, immigration to tens of thousands rather than hundreds of thousands a year. That was David Cameron's promise. Not only was that a lie, it was also the wrong thing to promise, because actually I would argue that immigration from Eastern Europe has been a fantastic success. These countries were given access to the European Union. They came out of the communist kind of world, joined the West, borders came down, and they could move freely across the European Union. Other countries like France and Germany said, well, you can join the European Union, but we will close our labour markets to you. You can't work legally in France and Germany if you've come in from Poland. That was true for the first several years. Britain was the only large country that said they could come in legally. That was a fantastically good idea. Because by saying that Poles and Czechs and Estonians and Latvians could come in legally, we got the ones who had good university degrees, who spoke great English. Because if you've got a good university degree, you speak great English, You don't want to work in the black market. You don't want to work illegally. So Britain has had this gigantic infusion of highly educated, hard-working, talented people. Does that mean that schools have got crowded and hospitals have got crowded? It does. But that's not the fault of the Poles coming in. It means that we should have built new schools, new hospitals, use the tax revenues paid by those newcomers to improve the British economy. Growth is good. New people is good. It's fantastic. The problem, I think, with the Leave camp is they're selling not only lies about how they can seal the borders, David Cameron can't respond to those lies because he's pretended that you can too, but also this myth that we'll be richer if we leave. If you stand on the southern coast of England, on the White Cliffs of Dover, on a clear day, you can see France. It's 23 miles away. That isn't going to change just because we leave the European Union. So those markets are still gigantically important to us. And if British companies are going to succeed in the future, they need the best possible access to those European markets. Now, the big lie that is being told by the Leave camp is that we can have it all. We can leave. We can stop sending money into the EU budget. We can seal our borders. We can tell foreigners not to come and work in the UK, but we'll still have absolutely unfettered access to European markets. I think that's a fantastic lie. I can't see why any democratic government in a place like France would let that happen. Why should they give us everything we want in exchange for nothing on their side? Why, you know, Britain gets to pick and choose exactly the relationship it wants. It won't happen. There will be barriers. And if you are the boss of a big company like Nissan or Toyota or General Motors in 5 or 6 years' time, working out where to put a new factory in Europe, I do not see why they would, for the life of me, build a new factory in a Britain outside Europe, which is going to face tariff barriers, is going to be outside the single market, and it's going to be wreathed in economic uncertainty. I think we're committing economic suicide if we take that gamble.
Quickly, before I go to a break, a follow-up to you, David Rennie. What came of Prime Minister David Cameron's negotiations to secure concessions from EU leaders?
Well, I mean, they were piffle and he got nothing. I mean, he promised something he couldn't get. David Cameron didn't really want this referendum at all. He did it out of weakness because his party was split and frightened of losing votes the last election to the anti-immigrant right. So he was backed into a corner. This was a kind of desperate gamble for him to buy him some time at the last election. And then he bought himself another gamble by saying, I'll go to Brussels and get some concessions. David Cameron is a smart man. He's been in some ways a successful prime minister, but he's a gambler. Time and again we've seen when his back is against the wall, when he's forced into the corner, he thinks, show me dice I can roll and I'll see if I can survive another day. And that's why we've ended up in this mess.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Robin Simcox. He's a Margaret Thatcher Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And David Rennie, from whom you just heard, he's Washington Bureau Chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist magazine. And we're discussing Britain's upcoming referendum on whether to stay in the European Union. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Accra, Ghana, Michael Larty. Well, back to you, Robin Simcox, to talk about perhaps some lies or myths, exaggerations on the Leave side that David alluded to.
I suppose I'd be interested in picking up on the point David referred to about David Cameron, how we got into this mess in the first place. And I think it is worth considering if the impact was going to be as cataclysmic, Britain leaving the European Union, if the impact was going to be as cataclysmic as David Cameron, George Osborne and those around him have said, he was a fool to offer this referendum. If he truly believed that, it says very bad things about his judgment that he would put Britain's future on the line in the way that he has, if he truly believes how the impact of what British leaving the EU would have. And I think that calls into serious question his judgment, regardless of whether he's a gambler or not. I think it's, if he truly believes it, it's a completely reckless gamble.
I think that's true, but it's not a reason to leave the European Union. I mean, punish him another way. Punish him by voting at the next election against him, then.
Well, that's a good point, Rob.
Well, no, it's not the reason to leave the European Union, certainly not. It's a very British thing to do down our own, I think, history or country and the rest of it. But I think we should remember that Britain is the fifth largest economy. It's on the UN Security Council, a permanent member. It's a nuclear superpower. It has significant amounts of soft power. It has obviously a history not without its past achievements. I think that we shouldn't be so convinced that Britain's future must be in the European Union. It's always played a very key role in between the transatlantic alliance and Europe. And so I think that Britain's future outside the European Union isn't necessarily as grim as the Remain side would suggest.
David.
But you don't have to believe that Britain will cease to exist to think it'd be better on balance to stay in the European Union. I mean, you say we're a member of the UN Security Council and we have nuclear weapons and a big military. All of that is true. So you're a security expert. What if I said, OK, because we have a great military and we've got nuclear weapons, I want us to leave NATO. We'll do just great outside NATO. And you would say, no. NATO helps us be stronger. It builds partnerships that actually enhance what we already have. I would say the same thing about the European Union. It's not that I think we would be dead outside the European Union. I just think it'd be a really bad idea to leave.
Of course, I would not suggest leaving NATO, but I would regard NATO and the European Union as kind of different beasts, really, in that European Union, it makes treaties, it has its own constitution. In some ways, you know, it has a court that's above the British court. Laws can be dictated on a European level, which Britain has no ability to shape. There is a, I think,
we
a
do have an
significant
ability to shape them. We have a big seat in Brussels at the moment, and every time a new law is negotiated, Britain is one of the big three countries at the table. Those laws will still be passed by the European Union in the future, but if we're out, they'll be passed, and then if we want to do business in Europe, we'll have to obey them with no chance to shape them, because we'll be outside the door, banging on the door.
What do you say to that?
Look, there is clearly an economic argument made for staying in the European Union, but I think this isn't a referendum ultimately about economics. I think that it's going to be one about sovereignty, about immigration and not just economic immigration, but I suppose kind of the impact it has on Britain as a society and culturally. And, you know, you can't always measure sovereignty in terms of economics. You know, it's also an instinctive thing that I think Britain feels has lost somewhat.
And David, Britain is not the only country that's upset about those pesky bureaucrats in Brussels. I mean, the Brussels bureaucracy is also something that those who want to leave the EU are upset about. Is that correct,
Robin? Yeah, I mean, the polling coming out of France recently about their thoughts on the European Union isn't looking so great either. I mean, this isn't just a British problem.
Exactly. That's the problem.
That's true. But the key word there is, Robin used the word, people feel that they're losing their sovereignty. Well, feelings, unfortunately, you know, that's one thing. Economics is another. I mean, you may dislike your boss, but that doesn't mean it would be a good idea to just go and say, I'm giving up my job because I don't like you, because you need a paycheck at the end of the week. Sometimes economics does matter. And the European Union is fundamentally an economic project, certainly as far as the Brits are concerned, because we don't plan to join a European army. And another big lie that the Leave camp says is we should listen to the fact that all of the experts, the governor of the Bank of England, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Treasury, every major economist in the UK says that we should stay. Well, who cares? The experts got everything wrong. The experts got it wrong and said these were exactly the people, Robin quoted this line, exactly the people who told us to join the euro. It's not true. The Treasury said don't join the euro. There's a reason why Britain isn't in the euro single currency, why we still use pounds and pence, not euros, because the Treasury experts said it was a bad idea. So now those same Treasury experts say, but staying in the European Union would be a good idea.
Robin, another question, and that is this so-called contagion effect. Are those in the so-called Leave camp, the Brexiters, are they the least bit concerned about, you know, the example this could show if Britain leaves the EU, that it would encourage those in France and others, and then we're looking at a disintegration of the European Union?
I mean, let's not overstate Britain's ability to shape, you know, the destiny of the European Union. There's a multitude of problems which the European Union has, regardless of whether Britain stays or leaves. I mean, the handling of the refugee crisis seems to be one such problem which is going to be there, regardless of the fate of Great Britain. If there is a democratic majority of people in European Union countries that want to leave the EU, then that's their democratic right to say so. I mean, if Britain leaving was to create that contagion effect and people would had referendums in other European Union countries and they voted to leave, I think democratic will should be respected.
It should be respected. It would still be a disaster. Look at who's cheering this on from the sidelines. It's the far-right racist Front National in France. It's the far-right racist Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. It's Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin. It's Donald Trump here in America. Those are the politicians cheering this on. I think that should tell you something.
Again, Robin, this is an important point. We're looking at these far-right extremist parties in Europe who would be gaining encouragement from leaving.
I think it's a grave mistake to paint this as a far-right movement animating this. It certainly is not in the UK.
I'm not saying that's what's happening in the UK, but that's who's cheering it on the continent. So if you're looking at contagion effects, the only political parties cheering on contagion effects are the nationalists and the far right on the continent. I'm not saying that the Leave camp in the UK is racist, but if you're looking at the contagion effects on Europe, the people cheering this on are exclusively the nationalist far right parties.
Well, that's true, and I think that some of the allies, you know, that you see, who have ever imagined seeing Nigel Farage and George Galloway on the same stage calling for Brexit? It's not something that I think many people on the Leave side are especially comfortable with at all. But people say Vladimir Putin wants this. I've not seen Vladimir Putin quoted on this. It seems to me to be a bit of a... It's kind of become received wisdom without him talking too much on it. I don't know, maybe Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi wants us to stay in the European Union. You know, I don't think these are necessarily the things that are going to shape the outcome.
We do actually know that Russia supports Eurosceptic parties because Russian banks have loaned money on soft terms to the Front National. They've intervened in the far-right parties in the European Parliament trying to give them support. We know that Russia thinks that a weak Europe, just like they think a weak NATO, is to Russia's advantage. They're nationalists. They don't like the other side, the free market, democratic West, to be united. Barack Obama came to the UK and said he thought it'd be a very bad idea for Britain to leave, precisely because the United States wants Britain to be the strongest possible partner. So he wants Britain to be strong in the UN, strong in NATO, and strong in the EU. That's the message from our single closest ally.
And of course, many in the US foreign policy elite come out in favor of Britain staying in the European Union. Does this argument not resonate at all with those who want to leave?
Sure, I think it does. You would have to be reckless not to pay attention from your close allies? Of course you wouldn't. I think ultimately, though, it doesn't change the animating forces why people in the UK are leaning towards voting out. I would still say, I stress, by the way, I do think the Remain will win this. It's a lot closer than I thought it would be, but I think Remain will ultimately win the vote. But what it has proved, and this referendum has been so close, so bitterly contested at times, is that Euroscepticism as a concept is going to remain no matter what the result.
I think also we should note it's unleashed some very horrible forces. And on Thursday morning in the UK, we saw a Labour Member of Parliament, Joe Cox, was stabbed and shot with a homemade gun by a 52-year-old man. Early reports said that he shouted Britain first. We don't know what that means, but she's been quite an active campaigner to stay in the European Union. And I think what we can say is that some of the posters that we have seen bought and paid for by the Leave campaign, I would say, have been pretty much racist. TV advertisements saying that Turkey is about to join the European Union and there will be Turks flooding into the UK. That's just simply a lie. Turkey is not about to join the European Union. And as long as Britain stays in the European Union as a member state, it has a veto. If we leave, we lose that veto. So this is scaremongering. I think there's a racial edge to this scaremongering. And I think that the Leave campaign, not all of them, but some of their leaders, should be ashamed of the forces that they've unleashed in this debate.
Last final words from you, Robin Simcox, addressing the fears about Turkey's accession to the EU and unfortunately the xenophobic acts and violence now we're seeing from some in the Leave camp.
Well, the David Cameron and the Turkey point is it's the perfect example of the problem, because David Cameron said very clearly when he was Ankara that he was going to be the strongest advocate for Turkey joining the EU. He says that to Turkish leaders, and it's the Foreign Office line on it. So people have not got unreasonable fears for thinking, well, Turkey will join the EU, because David Cameron was very vocal on it. Now, of course, when it comes to the referendum, we say, oh, well, obviously, Turkey will never join the EU. But again, it just gets to the kind of fundamental dishonesty about some of the conversations politicians have been having. In terms of the xenophobic side of things, I mean, obviously, outrageous and disgusting, the shooting that's just taken place. There's absolutely no doubt that any kind of violence like that has to be deplored, criticised and dealt with in the strongest terms.
And David Rennie, the last word to you before we close.
I think Robin has made an excellent case why David Cameron and the political elite deserve to be punished for their hypocrisy and deserve to be chastised for having lied and fibbed to the British people. I don't believe that Robin has made a case that the right way to punish them is to leave the European Union.
We shall see next week after the vote. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Robin Simcox. He's Margaret Thatcher Fellow, specializing in terrorism and national security analysis at the Heritage Foundation, and David Rennie, Washington Bureau Chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist magazine. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Rob McLean, and Encounter was produced here in Washington. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.